The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
Welcome to the Clark Howard Show, where it's all about you learning ways to save more and spend less, and don't let anybody ever rip you off. Visit us on the web at ClarkHoward.com and follow us on Facebook at Facebook.com/ClarkHoward. Coming up in just 20 minutes, I got a special warning for you about some dirty dealings going on with debt collectors. Huge percent of the American people have debts out there that a collector might try to reach out to you for. But I need to tell you about dirty stuff going on with debts that maybe you don't owe, or debts that the amount that you're being told you owe aren't anywhere close to what you really owe. And that's coming up in just 20 minutes. And when you're looking for a job, I got some key tips for you about looking for that job, and especially things you should not do when you're looking for a new job. You know, the number of openings right now is the greatest it's been pretty much in this century. So many jobs are open, relatively speaking, to what we've had over the 2000s. But I'm going to tell you how to turn the potential opportunity your way, not against you, 30 minutes from now. Talk about something with all the gadgets that people got over Christmas. What do you do with the old ones? What do most of us do? They end up in drawers, collecting dust, when some of the things, we may be able to turn them into money. Let's say you decided you needed to get the new, latest, greatest TV. Sell your old one. Why not? May not be worth a lot, but you can sell the thing, unless it's really, really old. And there's a market for it. If it really, really is old, you might try freecycle.com or freecycle.org, I'm sorry, as a way to move it along. And there's hazard with it, but you might consider selling one that's newer, but used to you on Craigslist. Turn it into money. You have an old cell phone? So many people got cell phones over the fall. Tens of millions of new cell phones purchased. So the old ones, either keep them as a spare or sell them on Gazelle. Or you can go to one of the Echo ATMs. They're reverse ATMs. You go to one of them, usually located strategically in malls or shopping centers around the country, and you put in your old cell phone into the machine. It digitally reads it, the model, the condition, the whole thing. Then they offer you money for it. That's better than just having it sit in a drawer, right? But if you have stuff nobody's going to want, old electronics, Best Buy is your friend. You can take old electronics to a Best Buy. Many of them will have a cap of 2 old electronics items a day. But you can take them into Best Buy. They'll take them off your hands. And it's a great way to clear clutter from your home. And if they're new enough, they'll be able to get them cleaned up, and they'll end up being useful to somebody somewhere instead of wasting space in your own home. There are a number of websites now that will buy electronics from you. One that has become more popular lately is Buyback World. And Buyback World gives you a flat rate for it. Amazon, which has been kind of at the fringes of this for a while, has a program where you can trade in old gadgets. And what they do is they give you gift cards for them, of course, to get you to come back and spend more money at Amazon. Our number is 877-87-CLARK. Gina is with us. Gina, you were in an accident. Are you okay?
Yes. Thankfully, we are all okay.
All right.
Good news.
That is the good news, because, you know, I worry about that more than anything else.
Yes. We all went skiing last Christmas. Our whole family went to Taos, New Mexico, and we rented a car while we were there. And one night we decided that we wanted to have a nice dinner on the mountain and went to a German restaurant. It was excellent. Well, on the way back home, we were driving, and talk about a false sense of security. You know, we assumed that we had four-wheel drive, and we were talking about how well the car was handling. And then my husband said to me, honey, hold on, brace the kids. I've lost control of the car. And we slid down the mountain.
Ooh.
And
off the side of the mountain?
Well, we started to go down, and it was what seemed to be an eternity to me. But thankfully, a small pine tree broke our fall down the mountain. And when my husband went the next day to get the car towed, he said it was a small pine that broke our fall. Otherwise, we would have just kept going down because we were pretty far up. But the next day, my husband had the village of Taos tow the car out, and the tow company took one look at the tires and said, oh, goodness, those don't look very good at all. First of all, they're very worn down, and they're not winter tires. And when my husband spoke to the car company just recently, he said, well, the car company said, well, these are all-year tires or all-weather tires.
But almost all tires now will have a designation on the tread that'll say M/S, which means mud and snow. If you go to a tire dealer, you'll be amazed how many of everyday tires will be rated M/S, mud, snow. Well, so it is possible that even though they were not true, what you think of traditionally as snow tires, they may have had an MS rating on them.
Mm-hmm. The tow company explained to my husband how we lost control. He said, well, since the tires didn't get traction, we slid down the mountain and had the and I guess the steering froze, everything froze, and he couldn't do anything. And so we just continued on in the same direction we were going, and so obviously we slid down. My question is, we got a bill in the mail from the car company saying we owe $7,000, and as I understand it, the credit card company said that they would take care of
the portion that your own automobile insurance does not cover.
Well, the deductible. But my question is this. We don't think that there is a police report, because the police did come, and I don't remember them filing a report or asking any questions. We're looking into that now. But is the car company negligent, and what do we do next?
Okay.
Like, what are our options?
All right, that is a great question. Now, let's go back to the thing with the tow truck driver saying in daylight, these tires are bald. These tires are worn. That would be a possible sign of negligence on the part of the car rental agency. At a time like that, what you would want to do is you'd want to take pictures of the tires that were on the vehicle that were bald, and that the rental agency put you in danger, allegedly, for having bald tires on the vehicle. But now, you're in a position where you have no proof of this other than hearsay of what the tow driver said to your husband. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If that was an argument you wanted to make, the time to have taken a stand on that was the day after that harrowing trip down the mountain that tree was your friend and saved your life. Somebody or up above or whatever was watching out for you, right?
They were.
So it's really too late in the game to try to allege something like that now. And this is a case where this is what auto insurance is for, and the protection from your credit card company that takes care of losses that you would have had out of pocket, that's what it's for. So I don't think this is the point at which you can really turn the clock back and try to make an argument that way. Now, the only exception I could tell you is if you're good on the web and you can find where there have been other cases against this car rental agency for putting unsafe vehicles on the road, find out what lawyer or law firm worked on those cases, and that would be who you would contact.
Okay, I could do that, I guess.
But otherwise, you know, the time to collect evidence is in the immediate time of when something happens. I know that next day, you were probably all shook up.
Oh, yeah.
And so the last thing you're really thinking about is, what are you going to do with the car rental agency later and the money that's going to come out of pocket? So, kind of too late. Our number is 877-87-CLARK, and Dean is with us. Hi, Dean. How are you?
Just fine, sir. How are you today?
Great. You are thinking of becoming a Roth man.
Well, I'm kind of confused on what to do. Right now, I'm currently putting 5% of my check in a company-sponsored 401k, and they match up to 6%. I've been reading that now you...
Wait. So if you were raising it from 5% to 6%, you'd get more match money?
No, they match 6% of what you put in.
Oh, okay.
A quarter.
Okay.
Per quarter.
Okay.
And I've already got a Roth that I'm maxing out every year. So I've read that now you can roll over 401ks into Roth. So I have an idea of what to do, but I don't think it's the right thing to do, so I thought I would ask you.
Well, first, you're not going to be allowed to.
Okay.
Because if you're still working at the place, the four, you can take a 401k, an old 401k, and put it into a Roth, but an active employer 401k, you cannot.
Okay.
So well, you don't even have to fret about it. But just for other people's interest, who may be in a situation with a 401k that is from a former employer, tell me what the scenario is you've been playing out in your mind, whether you should or shouldn't.
I'm looking at retiring in about 5 years, and so I'm trying
to... No, it wouldn't make sense for you.
I'm just trying to see where my money would be best served.
And the regular 401k, you know why? The conversion to a Roth really pays for someone who is long from retirement or is long from needing to draw in any of the money. If you're 5 years from retirement and you're likely to start drawing on the money, it's really not worth it to do the conversion from a regular IRA to a Roth. The scales really tilt very heavily if you told me you were 20 years from retirement,
mm-hmm,
and you were in a position that you could convert the 401k to a Roth, that would be great. And I think that's cool that you're maxing out your Roth and putting the 5% in the 401k and picking up the company match. What is the maximum you're allowed to put in your 401k where you work?
30%, and that's...
What?
That's what I'm getting ready to do.
You're allowed to put 30% of your pay in the 401k?
Yes, sir.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. And you're going to do that?
Yes, I am.
Wow, I love that. What motivated you to save that much?
I don't have hardly any bills at all, and I was buying gold, but sometimes I don't think that's the best decision either.
I'm not a fan of buying gold, I'll tell you that, Dean.
So I called the HR department, and they told me that I could go up to 30%, and they would match 6% of that on a quarterly basis. So that's
I think that's great. That's wonderful because it means you'll be living well below your what would have been your take-home pay before you did that,
mm-hmm,
which means you'll be living a lifestyle that means that when you do retire, you won't need as much money to live on because you're used to living a more frugal lifestyle, and you will improve the odds dramatically that you will not outlive your money if over these next 5 years before you might retire, you put in basically a third of your pay. You throw in the employer match. Yeah, 30 of your pay. I think that's great. Clark Rageous moment is something that sometimes will make your blood boil, but other times will not only upset you, it will keep you out of harm's way. Today's Clark Rageous moment is all about that.
Scams, ripoffs, outrages. It's a Clark Rageous moment.
I need to give you another warning, one that has been proven to be true, sadly, again and again. There are rogue collection agencies that are using a debt collection tactic that is so crooked, rotten, dirty, it stinks. It takes Clark Rageousness to a new height. Here's what's going on. And unfortunately, new legal findings in the state of New York show how terrible this is. There's no reason for me to believe that the egregious practices that have been exposed in court in the state of New York are any different than what's going on elsewhere in the country. Debt collection agencies, particularly debt buyers, those are groups that buy old debts, are lying in court about those debts, presenting cases against consumers without verifying that they're coming after the right person, without verifying the proper amount due, without verifying legally that the debts have been reviewed. In fact, some of the disclosures that came out found that a lot of these collection agencies suing people over debts are presenting false affidavits of debts without any verification that the amounts are close to right. So you have cases where people don't owe money because statute of limitations has expired. People don't owe money because they're suing the wrong person. People who are being sued for the wrong amount of money with false filings. And all these things are not isolated. They are sadly common things. What came out in the New York findings and has been true in others I've talked about in the past is that the collection agencies win by default. 95% of the time, the consumer being sued does not show up in court and ends up with a default judgment against them. You might even call the collection agency and say, oh, this is a big mistake. This isn't me. They say, oh, okay, don't worry about it. All the time knowing that all, what they're trying to do is get you to not show up in court and they get a default judgment. Guess what happens if you go to court and you challenge the validity of a debt? The collection agency suing asks the judge to dismiss that item against you. You must show up because almost always the information the debt collector is presenting in court is flat out wrong. You don't show up, that lie unchallenged becomes a court judgment against you. And that is Clark Rageous. You're listening to The Clark Howard Show.
Brand new this week at PodcastOne.com, PO'd with Dennis Miller and Adam Carolla.
Awesome!
The king of all podcasts, Adam Carolla, joins forces with iconoclastic comic legend Dennis Miller.
If you're asking me whose voice most closely mirrors what's in my head, it's this cat.
Great guests, great topics, and new listeners, always welcome.
So get PO'd now. I mean, download the show now.
Always available 24/7 at PodcastOne.com.
That's PodcastOne.com.
Welcome to the Clark Howard Show, where it's all about you learning ways to save more and spend less. And don't let anybody ever rip you off. Follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/Clark Howard. You want lots of information to save you money? Go to clarkhoward.com. Job market is improving, certainly not perfect, but it is rapidly improving. And I mentioned a stat a half hour ago, the number of job openings posted right now is the highest it's been pretty much this century. Big improvement in the availability of jobs. And a number of fields now, workers are being highly sought after. The health insurer Aetna did a wholesale review and gave a big chunk of its workforce automatic pay increases because they were facing a lot of turnover in their workforce and found that they weren't being competitive on salaries, particularly at the lower end. Changing market. But if you want to take advantage of this job market, I need to tell you a key warning. A lot of employers, particularly bigger ones, are now using software programs to try to figure out which of their employees are out prospecting for a new job. They're scanning LinkedIn as an example and many other job sites to see who might be out there looking for something new. Some employers will take it as such a sign of disloyalty that they may turn around and can you simply because you're out looking for a new job. Be discreet. I had mentioned about 6 weeks ago, and we have them listed on clarkhoward.com, that there are now various tools you can use to prospect for a job that keep you anonymous in the early part of the job search and the romancing going on between you and a potential new employer. Very important that if you are in an existing job looking for a new job, that you use those tools that I talked about last month, because you don't want to end up in a position where a good thing, more job possibilities out there, becomes a terrible thing for you being called in and being canned. I should tell you, though, the other side of that coin, and you got to know the culture where you work, it may be good at some companies to be caught looking for another job. Why? Because at some companies, they're so desperate to have your skill set that if they know you're out looking for other work, it may result in insecurity on the employer's part offering you a higher wage. But I'll never forget the risk involved in looking for a job from the job you have. There was a woman working here at the studio many years ago who had left her desk, and her boss came over to her desk looking for something and saw on her computer that she was filling out an application for a job elsewhere. That was her last day working at the studio. Discretion is very important. Our number is 877-87-CLARK. Brian is with us. Hello, Brian.
Hello.
How are you?
Good.
You're getting married. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You excited?
I am.
Great. How can I be of service? Am I helping you plan your wedding or something else?
Well, I was actually going to ask about home mortgage. My fiance, she owns a house, and it's eligible for refinancing, and I am eligible for the VA home loan program. Is that something that would be, like, something good to look into for, like, a possible refi?
The VA home loan program and your use of it would depend on how much equity is in the property, how valuable it would be for you to use your VA benefits. Because the greatest part about using the VA benefit is that you don't have to come to the table with any meaningful amount of money.
Okay.
So your VA benefits, usually you want to use those at exactly the appropriate time. Tell me some about the property, how much she owes, and how much you'd guess it's worth.
Our approximate worth is like $150,000, and she owes $90,000.
Yeah, so there's no need to do a VA refi. She's a perfect candidate for a conventional refinance. And
okay,
at a $90,000 figure, it would be great to go to a credit union to get a quote on refining. Because
okay,
the banks generally turn their noses up at people who owe less than $120,000 on a home.
Okay.
But credit unions are ideal for a balance of that nature.
Yep.
What is her current, what's her current mortgage rate?
I'm not sure on the rate. I know it's a 5-1 ARM. So, I mean, eventually we'd have to refinance, you know, regardless, like once those 5 years are up.
You know, it's funny because people who were in 5-1s that ran out over the last many years have benefited mightily from being in a 5-1 because the way they're set up with the Federal Reserve artificially holding down interest rates, they've been really, really favorable. But as we turn and we go back to normal interest rates in the next couple of years, being in a 5-1 ARM will be ugly, Brian, and getting a refi done now is a smart idea.
Okay, so it's better to do it now versus waiting for the end of the 5 years?
Yes, because interest rates are, even though they've stepped up just a little bit, they're still very, very favorable.
Okay.
And one thing she can look at, how long is she going to stay in that property? How long are the two of you planning to keep it?
There's no plans to move. This could very potentially be lifelong.
Great. And with two incomes, you think you could swing the payment on a 15-year loan on a $90,000 balance?
Probably.
The spread between 30 and 15-year loans now is about the largest it's ever been.
Okay.
And stay away from any big banks.
Okay.
Because right now the big banks, because they can, are completely taking advantage of people, ripping them off on new mortgages and on refinances. It has nothing to do with my normal distaste for giant monster mega banks. It's just right now on the mortgages, they're really gouging people. Our number is 877-87-CLARK. Donna's with us. Hello, Donna.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you. So you have your home completely paid off.
Yes.
Doesn't that feel nice?
Yes, it does.
Do you know what percent of Americans as homeowners own their homes free and clear?
No, I sure don't.
How about close to 1 in 3?
That sounds about right, and that's hard to do.
But a lot of people have made it happen just like you, Donna.
Yes.
How can I be of service?
I need to find out if I were to pass on and I'd like to add my children to the house, if they would get it. Do I need to put them on a deed or anything?
Okay. So we're getting into an area that has a lot of loose ends to it. First,
right.
Why are you interested in adding your kids now instead of just having them inherit the house at the time of your passing away?
Well, that's why I'm trying to find out what the difference is. I was going to go see a lawyer, I guess, because I had a girlfriend that did that. Her mom passed on, and she added her son to the deed.
Well, the way the tax code is set up, it's usually better for your kids to inherit the home at the time of your passing instead of now. On the other hand, what makes it complicated, the reason I said loose ends, is that many times a parent will put their kids in ownership of the home, essentially sell the home to the kids with the right to lease it for $1 a year or whatever for the rest of your life, so that if down the road you needed long-term care, nursing home care or something like that, the home would still be theirs and would not be seized by the state.
Okay.
So this is an area where you don't want to see a traditional lawyer. You want to see what's known as an elder law attorney.
Okay.
An elder law attorney, all he or she does all day long is work with people who are trying to figure out the best way to handle their assets for the last part of their lives and for seeing that assets are passed to their loved ones rather than ending up burning up in taxes or ending up in the hands of the state in the example of a home. There's a trade association. Are you a web surfer?
Yes.
NAELA, for National Association of Elder Law Attorneys, NAELA.org.
Okay.
And you'll be able to find elder law attorneys near you and sit down and talk with one about the right way for not just your home, but anything else you have to be properly owned and titled, to see that your goals and objectives are met, to make sure you're well provided for during your life, but that your kids benefit at the time of your passing. Ken is with us. Ken, you are fortunate to be enjoying retirement. Is that true?
This is basically true. I work for some companies, but basically I retired from another company. I have a retirement account that's still a 401k that's sitting in the previous company, which actually they're no longer. They've been bought several times. But the management company for them, the administrative that handles the account, whatever, they're no longer going to manage this account. So I have four options.
You're going to have a new administrator for your 401k.
I can either leave it or I can move it over to the one that's doing it now, or I can take a lump sum, which I wouldn't do naturally, but just trying to see what would you
have
do
you
with
been
that?
You're right now with that 401k. You're with one of the best 401k administrators in the country.
Okay.
It's with a great company. They're pretty low cost, and I would consider taking the money and with them that second option you were given of moving it to them into an IRA,
right,
would be something that I think would be a smart strategy. I imagine you've been really happy with them over the years handling the 401k. Otherwise, you wouldn't have left it there anyway.
Right. They've done quite well.
So in a circumstance like this, I think it would be the wisest action for you to skedaddle that money out of them into your own IRA. Now with them, it's much easier if you stay with your current 401k administrator as the one that would manage the IRA for you.
Right.
because doing the paperwork with them is totally internal. No money ever comes to you, and you just get you open what's known as a shell account, an IRA that has nothing in it with them, and then the funds that go in there are the funds from this old employer 401k.
Right. Okay.
Just make sure that as you do paperwork, never at any time that you sign anything where you're agreeing for them to liquidate your account and send you a check.
Okay.
Because that has terrible consequences to it.
Right.
But especially with what you said, with the company changing hands and all that, that's a situation that you want to move your 401k to your own IRA anyway.
Right.
You don't want, with all that moving around, that somebody forgets who you are or forgets that this is your money.
Right. Okay, great.
Okay?
Thank you, sir.
All right, best to you, and you enjoy your semi-retirement. Sounds like that's what I should really be calling it, right?
Right, but I appreciate it, and we appreciate you every day because you give us a lot of good information, and I thank you.
Thank you very much. Carol is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Carol.
Hi.
Carol, you are buying new wheels.
Yes.
How come you don't sound more excited about your new wheels?
Well, actually, I bought this car for my husband, and I was trying to find him a used vehicle, but he drives so much every day. He's driving about 115 miles to 120 miles every day round trip.
Is he? Really? That's huge, you know.
Yes. So I just traded in his old BMW that had 252,000 miles on it that was using a lot of oil, and we were spending so much money on repairs every month. And I got a Volkswagen Passat, and now they're wanting me to, or...
Did you get the TDI? Does that come in a TDI, or did you get the gas engine version?
It's the gas engine. It's the gas.
Okay.
And it's a real nice car. They said it should get around 31 to 35 miles a gallon.
You'll find out if that really is true, but let's just say 30. His commute costs for gasoline won't be brutal.
Okay.
So that's good.
So my concern is, then they're saying, well, since he drives so much, you probably should purchase this extended warranty. And it's about $2,900 through the life of the loan. I got zero interest. They said that they could put that on there and it would also be zero interest.
Well, $3,000 pays for a lot of repairs.
Uh-huh.
What is the mileage cap on the extended warranty?
After the 36,000 miles, then it goes to 100, so it would have...
64,000 miles.
Right.
And the coverage under the extension normally will not be as generous as it would be under the manufacturer's initial. Is the plan they're offering you Volkswagen's branded extension of the warranty, or is it some company that the dealership is...
No, I believe it's theirs.
The dealership?
Mm-hmm.
Not worth the paper it's written on, in my opinion.
Oh, okay.
You only want... If you did decide to buy an extension of the warranty or an extended service contract or whatever, you only want to buy the Volkswagen branded one.
Okay.
Because the problem with the third-party ones is so many of them end up going bust.
Uh-huh.
And you're just out $2,900 with nothing to provide any peace of mind. Now, the only extended warranties of any kind or service contracts or whatever that I'm even neutral on are automobile ones, because the cost of a repair can be backbreaking sometimes. And if you couldn't afford a repair and your husband can't get to work, that's just a horrible event. And so if there's not the resources to pay for a catastrophic loss, then looking at an extension of the warranty is a good idea. Now, the other thing, you may have an option with the Volkswagen branded extension of the warranty to buy it in the first year or at any point up to when you'd hit the 36,000-mile mark, which in your husband's driving life would be like the first 14 months, I guess.
Right.
And you might consider waiting, even though you would have to write the check instead of finance it, because then it would give you the ability to have a feel for how reliable the Passat is and whether you'd rather have the money to pay for a repair if one happened, or you'd rather have the peace of mind of the warranty. You're listening to The Clark Howard Show.
When you're ready to buy a car, True Car is changing car buying forever. That's right. True Car helps car buyers get rid of the fear that they might overpay. Every day, True Car users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. And True Car users save an average of $3,221 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, download the True Car mobile app. Or go to TrueCar.com to find out what others paid for the car that you want. Then register to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. The third step is really simple. Take your guaranteed savings certificate to the True Car certified dealer for a better hassle-free car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states. With True Car, you can save time, save money, and never overpay. To see how much you can save on the car that you really want, simply download the True Car mobile app or visit TrueCar.com today.
Hi there, and get ready. This is Bonnie Fuller, President and Editor-in-Chief of HollywoodLife.com, and we have got a brand new podcast coming at you. We've got tons of amazing celebrity news and big star interviews.
This is Chloe Malas, the Senior Entertainment Reporter for Hollywood Life, and I have to tell you, I'm most excited for Bonnie Fuller to mispronounce some of the biggest celebrity names, like Scarlett Johansson, Maggie Gyllenhaal, and then my favorite, Ariana Grundle. Remember those, Bonnie?
Those are Canadian pronunciations.
Download a brand new episode every Thursday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
I'm so glad you're with us on the Clark Howard Show. Why? Because we learn together. In this empowerment zone, we give each other guidance, direction, and I'll tell you, we got lots of direction coming my way at clarkhoward.com. One thing that I am really proud we have is our Clark Stinks Forum, where if you feel that I've been giving bad advice, I've been not seeing things clearly, you feel I'm just wrong, you go to clarkhoward.com, go to our discussion board, Clark Stinks, and let me know. And then others can read what you write. They can comment on it. They may say, hey, I got something I'm much more sore at Clark about, and post that. And once each week, our executive producer, Krista, goes through the Clark Stinks and looks for ones that are particularly enlightening or entertaining.
I should have never encouraged you to speak.
You must think I'm pretty stupid.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe you're right, pal.
What you got?
All right.
Last week, you were way too nice to me.
It's not me. It's the people.
Well, but the posts were like, well, you don't really stink, but I think you could.
Because people love you. You're a nice guy. They're nice to you. Kid gloves.
Nah, give it to me.
All right, let's see what we have
right between
here.
The eyes, Krista.
Yes, taxing 529 plans is a proposal. I proposed to my wife and we're still married. A proposal to tax the Roth IRA is coming, and I hope it isn't a shotgun wedding. Clark, you now know what we told you all along. I propose that Clark stinks with his Roth rants because anything Washington gives can be taken away.
That is so true. But what happens with something like the Roth IRA, the constituency for it is too large for the promise made to be broken. It would be a complete curveball that any kind of proposal, lame proposal, that would punish those who have saved for retirement to have that benefit taken away with taxation. I'm not saying there won't be a proposal at some point that would do it, but I think there's way too large a population supporting Roths. We are not Argentina, and the rule of law still means something, and as far as I can imagine in the future, will mean something in the United States. One thing, though, with changing something like that, if you said, we're not going to have Roth IRAs anymore in the U.S., but people who already have them, that's fine. It's when you make changes retroactively. 529 plans. If the Congress decided There are not going to be any more tax-free accounts for college. But those of you who already have them, have them. That's fine, too. It's changing the rules in the middle of a game that's not fine, and I don't fear that with the Roths.
Clark, a gentleman called in who was going on a European vacation to multiple countries. He wanted to know what he should do to get access to a phone. Your best advice was to switch his cell phones to T-Mobile, which would give him access to data and text. Good advice, but let me suggest another option. Consider setting up an account with Republic Wireless. For $99, he can buy one of their phones. Then for $5 a month, he can have unlimited voice, text, and data access over Wi-Fi. Note that he could only call U.S.-based phone numbers, but that's all he wanted to do anyway. Then, when he doesn't need access anymore, simply cancel the plan. There is no contract. Another option that's even cheaper would be to buy and reactivate a used Republic phone from a source such as eBay. Disclaimer, I have no affiliation with Republic Wireless whatsoever.
That is a great suggestion. Republic Wireless.
Oh, and that was RJ who wrote that.
RJ, Republic Wireless is probably the best cell phone offer in the United States. $10 a month is unlimited talk and text, data wherever you have Wi-Fi. $25 a month is unlimited talk and text and data. $5 a month, you can only use Republic Wireless where there's Wi-Fi for anything, but then you have everything. So that is a great suggestion for overseas, as available as Wi-Fi is all over the place now.
Clark, I feel that you give financial and investment advice far too often when the caller's situation is one that would be best handled by a fee-based financial advisor. I know that you occasionally advise people to seek the advice of a financial advisor, but I think you should do it much more often. I've listened to many calls where you dish out pretty advanced financial advice in short sound bites based on very limited information that could potentially have a disastrous effect on the caller's life savings if you're wrong. I hope you realize that for many of the people calling you, your financial advice is gospel, and they are very likely to follow it to the letter shortly after they hang up. However, you are giving this advice based on a very limited picture of their financial situation, which, as you know, in most cases, is much more complex than the caller has communicated or that they even realize. Also, though you are more knowledgeable than, than most regular folks about personal finance, as far as I know, you don't have the credentials or certifications of a professional financial advisor, which likely also means you don't have the extensive financial education and training required of certified professionals.
What was the poster's name? So I can respond by name.
They didn't put their name.
Anonymous. Mm-hmm. Hi, Anonymous. Okay, so you have no idea. When I'm answering a call from somebody that involves some level of investing, how I answer those questions. Because you are completely right. I have to be very careful and cautious when I cross a line. And there are times that I'm wrong, that I went too far in giving information about investing. The actual act of investing is not complicated, but individual financial situations can be. And there are times that I maybe should have pulled back and said to somebody to seek a fee-only financial planner, not fee-based, fee-only, or made alternative suggestions other than getting advice from me. Most of the time that I'm answering a question is from somebody who is just trying to get started. And they need that booster shot to get going. And they're accumulating from maybe their first dollar, which creates a different environment, one that I feel very comfortable answering questions. To the issue of credentials, I was trained about investing by my father, who used to work on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange from when I was in elementary school. And he and I owned an investment company together with other individuals from when I was very young. And so my knowledge comes from actual experience from childhood.
Clark, I've listened to you for years and occasionally visit the website. I am a heating contractor, and I do know that using a programmable or a smart thermostat can save some money. I was shocked to see the video on the homepage with you extolling the virtues of the Nest thermostat, complete with official Nest propaganda footage. I would not have a problem with it if you occasionally mentioned it along with other types of thermostats, but for years I've heard you say that you didn't take money from advertisers. I find it hard to believe Nest didn't cut you a nice check.
Oh my goodness! No, Nest gave me nada. In fact, I have the Nest thermostat that I paid real money for. But the Nest is not the only show in town now. There are many, many thermostats that use artificial intelligence now from multiple manufacturers, including the heating and air conditioning manufacturers like Carrier and other companies like that, that make their own Nest-like device. Nest created the category, but absolutely is not the only choice today. I am unbought and unbossed. See, you upset me. I can't even say it right.
You are off the mark with your prescription advice. Big boxes are not always lowest and have long wait times along with impersonal service. Please do more research with someone who actually works in a pharmacy.
I thought you were going to say my wife's name on that. Who posted that one?
I'll read the name if they put it on there.
Because my wife is like, why do you want me to fill these at Costco? It takes forever. Well, Costco is kind of a unique case because they normally are much cheaper than anyone else on prescription drugs. But when you look at the big chains, Walgreens, CVS, and Rite Aid, actually you are very likely to pay more going to one of the big three than you would going to an independent, community-based, and community-owned pharmacy.
Clark, I am appalled that you endorse SodaStream for savings. I know that you buy soda on sale. After all, you are the ultimate miser. Therefore, a quick calculation shows that the on-sale canned drinks are cheaper than SodaStream due to the high cost of the syrup they sell. I priced it at Costco. The ROI never materializes for a serving, and the cost of the machine is on top of the individual serving expense. Shame, shame, shame.
Well, what I do is I buy the SodaStream syrup only when it's on sale. But I will tell you that I have fatigued on the SodaStream. I don't use it as much as I used to, particularly because there have been some really good deals on the cases of soft drinks. And so I've been buying more of those than using the SodaStream. But what I do love the SodaStream for is making carbonated water. I love to drink water, but I really love to drink carbonated water.
What is a fax alert? I once heard Clark call it a fraud alert, but that's not what it says. Fax alert sounds ridiculous. How about replacing it with a submarine klaxon?
Fraud.
That's one of our buttons.
One of your fun buttons. I'm looking for it, Krista. I don't see it. Okay. Whatever it is, I apologize that it doesn't speak clear diction, but you know, I don't have the clearest diction either.
Clark, I think you're starting to smell just a little. I listen to your show almost daily and understand your stance on the big mega giant monster banks. However, they provide all the services that I need. I get to call them 24/7. I can deposit cash in their ATMs. I manage my accounts so I don't get garbage fees. I only use their ATMs that are all over town so as not to pay fees. These are just some of the advantages of these mega monster giant banks. I can always count on them. As far as my utility services, I use both Verizon and Comcast. I love their services and even more their reliability. They work when I need them to work. I tried the alternative to paying for the Comcast monopoly, and I was just not satisfied with the service. The extra $30 I pay for each of the services is well worth it when I know that my wife, who works at night, can make a phone call in case of an emergency, and then I can get my Downton Abbey fix on demand through Xfinity's new amazing user interface online and on my TV. I guess what I'm saying is, in spite of their higher costs and don't care about the individual customer mentality, these big companies are just better than the competition and hence more expensive. Regards, David.
David, thank you for that post. I don't really even know what to say to your post, but I appreciate your opinion, because it's funny you said, even though the service isn't any good, customer service isn't any good, you like the actual service package each offers. I'll just let that stand on its own. I want to hear from you. If I have upset you, go to ClarkHoward.com, go to Clark Stinks, and let me have it. Our number is 877-87-CLARK, and Jeff joins us.
I love listening to your show.
Thank you.
My wife and I, we're really good with our credit. And what ended up happening over the past year, we just had a nightmare year. Roof repairs, two brand new AC units. We went from $20,000 in savings to $18,000 in credit card debt.
Wow, that's a huge swing, isn't it?
It is. But the good thing is that our ACs are good for, you know, the next 20 years. Our roof's good for the next 20 years and stuff like that. So,
no, you know what is really good? In your situation, you went from 20 grand in savings to being almost 20 grand in debt because of unexpected circumstances. That means that you were not living a credit card debt lifestyle, which makes it easier for you to dig your way out.
No, like I said, I listened to you, and I do my retirement funds. I didn't really want to borrow from my retirement funds. The credit cards were handy. Looking back now, I don't know if that was the right choice or not.
It was the right choice.
Okay, good. So my question to you is, my wife and I have set up a budget. We sold all our toys. We did everything we could. Now we're on a strict budget right now. Is it better? What we're doing right now is paying the minimum payment each week. So when I get paid on a weekly basis, each week I pay the minimum payment to a credit card. Is it better? Because what's ended up happening is they jacked up our rates. Each time we were paying like a bulk off, they were lowering our credit score or lowering our
limit.
Our limit, and now our credit score is going
devastated.
Yes, it's going down. You know, down
right.
Outward. So my question to you is it better to concentrate on one card and pay it off and then work on another one? Or is it better just to spread the wealth out, keep making the minimum payments each week, and just take slow chunks out of the credit
card? There are two philosophies. There are two philosophies on that. If you have a minimal spread between the five interest rates on the five different cards, generally paying as much as you can towards the one with the smallest balance is psychologically healthy, because it just feels good to go from five outstanding debts till four, but that's all in your head. If you have a big spread in the interest rates, you want to pay minimums on everything except the one with the highest interest rate and throw as much money towards it as you can, because then you're getting much more bang for your buck by paying more than the minimums against the highest interest rate card.
Yeah, they're basically, they're roughly the same. I mean, we're talking minimal. I mean, we're not talking anything. I have a credit card in through the credit union, which has been, to be honest with you, the most nicest to me.
Of course.
They understood and everything.
Right.
I talked to the bank and they didn't raise it. So what you're saying is basically just go ahead and keep making the minimum payments on all the three of the major hitters to keep bringing down my payments.
Well, I would say that what you do is, since they all have similar interest rates, which one of the cards has the lowest balance?
We have, you know, card that was an airline card.
Okay. I would throw, since that's the lowest balance card, just so that you feel like you're making real progress, pay the minimums against the other four, and that Bank of America card, throw as much at it each month as you can. So you get that off the table. And then you're down to four cards you're having to deal with. And then when you wipe out the fourth one, then you have three. Because again, psychologically, you feel the sense of progress, and it puts you one step closer to turning the tables on the credit card companies charging you the very high rates of interest. You're listening to the Clark Howard Show.
What do Rich Eisen and Snooki have in common? Well, how about they were both just selected as Best New Podcasts of 2014 by the editorial board of iTunes? Oh yeah, and you'll also find them and another 200 amazing shows at podcastone.com. While we're at it, let's not forget to congratulate Adam Carolla as he continues his winning streak by being one of the most downloaded shows ever on iTunes.
That's correct! Congratulations!
So if you want to find the best and most downloaded podcasts, there's only one place to go. Podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Welcome to the Clark Howard Show, where it's all about you learning ways to save more and spend less, and don't let anyone ever rip you off. You want to be an entrepreneur? You want to have your own service business? What did that mean traditionally? Quite often it meant that you were going to have to open a storefront, pay big rent, be obligated to a landlord for years to come, sign a personal guarantee, and the whole thing might be far more money than you could ever handle. Well, the food truck business showed a different path, a different way, that is now spreading like wildfire. A lot of restaurants have ended up opening that started off as food trucks. Very inexpensive relatively to equip. The overhead is much lower. People may get to learn about you. There may be a buzz that's created. And you end up eventually probably opening your own traditional restaurant. And that has now pointed the way for many, many other mobile businesses. The other day, we saw at a neighbor's house a mobile dog grooming service. And I talked to the woman who runs the business, and she is booked up day after day, week after week, as she goes to the customer's home and does the dog grooming. And apparently the customers love it. For her, her greatest advertising is being parked in someone's driveway, she told me, because people come, just like I came to find out what it was she was up to, because I was curious, that she'll have her truck parked. She's got the number on the side of the truck, and they're like 18-inch high numbers. I mean, she's got huge numbers across the truck, and people call up, and that's how she gets business. So the truck is both her advertising billboard, essentially, and her service center. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. You know, there's now mobile hair salons. I saw this recently, a mobile trainer truck, like a personal trainer who goes around with the truck and has all the equipment inside. And I told you before about people that were doing basically pop-up trunk sales, that they go around with women's fashion and women go into the truck and see what they've got and buy stuff. And the sky is the limit. There are endless numbers of businesses selling goods or services that you can low overhead entry into a business by having a rolling truck and instead of a traditional fixed location. And it's the truck market. I don't know if the truck market is influencing this or if this is influencing the truck market, but now these boxy trucks that are becoming all the thing for delivery services are also making it so much easier. The Transit Connect line from Ford, the Nissan line, which I think is called the NVs, and there's a line from Chrysler of these big boxy trucks that work perfectly for a mobile business that can hold a lot of inventory, a lot of equipment, or whatever. So if you have that business idea, but opening up in a traditional way is a bridge too far, see if mobile would make it happen for you. Our number is 877-87-CLARK. Susan's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Susan, you want to talk about trying to buy a home and having a problem on a mortgage. Is that right?
Well, here's my situation. Thank you for taking my call first.
Certainly.
I own a home. I just tried to refi, and I was turned down. And the reason why is my Equifax credit score was 640. Between my husband and I, we have a combined income of $525,000. He's been employed for the same company for over 20 years, and I for 3 years. We owe $1,000,001 on our home mortgage. The only other bills that we have, other than, you know, normal life bills, is we have a $1,200 two-car bill payment, monthly bill payment. And other than that, our problem is we have no credit card debt. We don't have any credit cards, and we have no debt. Everything we do is either cash or debit card, and that has worked against us.
It does work against you. And, you know, the beauty of having credit cards that you use just very occasionally is they have more to do than any other single thing in giving you a very high credit score. So let me step back, because I hear the frustration in your voice. So you hit me with a lot all at once. So your credit score is a 640, and what's your husband's?
No, both combined is about around a 640. We're both in the same low.
Oh, and it's because the only thing you have, you're almost what they call a thin file. You have this mortgage debt and nothing else.
Right, plus our two car payments that are equal about $1,000, a little over $1,000 a month.
Right, and you're current on everything.
Exactly.
Have you tried to get a credit card?
You know what? People have said to us, well, I haven't tried to get a store credit card. American Express recently turned us down. And he's earned, like I said.
Right. It doesn't matter. Here's the crazy thing. Your credit score has zero to do with what your income is.
Okay.
Zero. Nothing. It never comes up.
Okay.
So your credit score is strictly based on what credit you have, how long you've had it, how well you do paying your bills on time, mm-hmm. and how much with credit cards, how much of your available credit you're using. So are either of you yet a member of a credit union?
Yes, he is.
Right. Has he been to his credit union to see if they'll even extend him a small limit credit card?
No.
That's the absolute next step.
Okay.
Because if you were a traditional mortgage borrower, you would be shunted off to the FHA loan program. But because of the amount of money that you have on a mortgage, you're a jumbo borrower, what they call a jumbo
right.
loan.
Yep.
And the jumbo loans, because of just issued new federal regulations, jumbo loans are going to require even larger amounts of equity or an even larger down payment and a higher credit score than what was required before. So jumbo borrowers are kind of in a penalty box all their own. Depending on where you live in the country, a jumbo starts at $417,000 in most places and as high as $700,000+ in the highest cost counties in the country. So the two of you are in this jumbo arena. Are you on a floating rate jumbo or just a high fixed
5%.
Rate?
And
sorry?
Etiquette. And when does those regulations start?
The regulations are phased in over the next 11 months, although a lot of banks will start to adopt to them in the next probably 90 days.
Okay.
Although they will not be fully operational for 11 more months. So you said you're in Connecticut?
Correct.
Very high cost housing market.
Yes.
I mean, you know that. So
yes.
A lot of counties in Connecticut come to the much higher FHA limit. But even with that, you're way past that. So how much equity do the two of you have in that home?
Not much. $400,000 or $500,000. No more than $500,000.
Well, to a lot of people, that's a lot. But
yeah,
so the
okay.
home's worth like $1.5 million and you owe $1.1 million.
On a fire sale, $1.6 million.
All right. So there's a couple possibilities. One is what's known in the lingo of the trade as a mezzanine loan. I don't know if anybody's used that term with you.
No, I've never heard of it.
All right. What happens is a small local bank where you go sit down with the loan committee or the president of the bank, him or herself,
okay.
will make a loan to you based on your overall profile and hold the loan in the bank, what's known as in portfolio. They don't do that as much as they used to, but in the circumstances you laid out, that's the likeliest scenario. And in Connecticut, you should have a number of small local community banks you can go to and sit down and talk with the president of a bank.
Okay.
Because your high income earners got a lot of money that can go into that bank as a customer. And so you could potentially be a pretty profitable customer for the bank. The second alternative, your husband goes and gets a small balance credit card. You get a small balance credit card from the credit union. You start to build up a good payment history, a good record. Your credit score moves up quite nicely pretty quickly because you now have the most important form of credit for a credit score, a credit card. And I know it just is crazy for you to hear that the income you've got as a couple and all that doesn't matter at all for credit scores. It truly doesn't matter at all. Try those steps I suggest. Let's see what you can make happen. Our number on the Clark Howard Show, 877-87-CLARK. Danny, you are a fellow UMA lover. Is that true? Danny.
Oh, this does not bode well for UMA, Clark.
Danny, where are you? I don't hear you, Danny.
Danny was calling to say he loves his UMA.
We're going to do an Ask Clark from ClarkHoward.com. Joel, who do you have an Ask Clark from?
That was classic. Clark, this one's from Linda, who says, what's your opinion of jitterbug telephones?
Jitterbug is fantastic for people who are senior citizens and looking for a cell phone that is unbelievably easy to use. Jitterbug looked at this market and said, wait a minute. All the cell phones are geared towards people that are 18 years old. What if you're 78 years old and you want something just really, really easy to use? So Jitterbug makes some phones, about $100 for a Jitterbug phone, and the phones allow you to do calling at a very low monthly cost. But in the case of like my mom, who is not doing as well as she once was, with a Jitterbug phone, she can just hit the operator button and tell the operator, they charge a little more for this, which one of her kids she wants to talk to. And the operator, like in the old days, finds us, places the call to us from the numbers she has on file for us. Jitterbug is for a very specialized market, but it is a very well thought out product to allow you the opportunity to stay in touch. The website to go to is greatcall.com. Our number is 877-87-CLARK. Kurt's with us. Hello, Kurt.
Hi, Clark. How are you?
Great. Thank you.
I have a problem with my mortgage company.
What did they do to you?
Well, I inherited some money, and I paid off my cars and all my credit card loans. And then I took what was left of the money and was going to send a fairly large payment to my mortgage company. So I got the address, called them up. And they gave me the address to mail it to. We were told it had to be a cashier's check or a certified check. Got the check cut. Sent it out, United States Postal Service priority mail with a delivery confirmation receipt. And they received it on the 11th, but it appears that they lost it. And since it's a certified funds check, my bank can't cancel it and refund my money or give me a new check for 90 days.
Wow. All right, so your bank is like washed its hands of it because it is a official check.
Right.
And the bank you paid that you have delivery confirmation that they received it is saying what? It's in research or what are they saying?
The research department has it right now and they're saying, well, we've looked. We can't find it. We have no evidence that we got it. And I said, but I...
Wait. So what does your priority mail slip mean?
Well, that's what I'm asking.
I think that's a perfectly valid question. So what is the research department saying as they research and you say, here's my priority mail slip. Here is a copy of the cashier's check because you have the cashier's check receipt, right?
Right.
So
they say they don't have it.
That's not an answer. So I'm trying to follow. What is it that the people at this giant monster mega bank are going to do about it? Because this is one of the four largest banks in the United States that only exists because of your and my kindness as taxpayers.
Right, right. And, so far they've just said, you'll have to wait 90 days with your bank and have them cut a new check and send it in.
Really? So the person who said that, I wonder what they would think if they sent a large check to their mortgage company and it went missing. Would they be happy if they got that same piece of garbage answer from their bank?
I wouldn't think so.
All right, so let me hear what you've done besides talk to customer no service.
Well, I've talked with my bank to make sure that the check has not cleared.
And it has not?
And it has not cleared.
All right, but what have you done with the mortgage company that's giving you customer no service? What steps have you followed so far?
Well, I've talked to their customer service department.
No, you talked to customer no service.
Been on hold with them for hours and hours and hours.
Right.
And been on hold with their accounts, with their payment posting center, and been on hold with them for hours and hours and hours. And, of course, there's really nobody else that you can get to because it's all automated answering systems, and there's no place else to go at this point.
Have you filed a complaint against, because this is a bank, you file a complaint with the federal regulators. Have you filed a complaint with the federal government yet against them?
No.
Well, that would be... If you had called me the day all this frustration started, I would have wanted you to do it that day to get things moving.
Okay.
And start at OCC.gov.
OCC.gov?
I would like you to call them. I'll give you the number right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's 800-613-6743.
Okay.
Now, there's a chance that they might punt you to the Federal Reserve.
Okay.
But hopefully you'll get help right here because they have contacts at the giant monster mega banks that you as a normal earthling don't have.
Okay. Well, I'll give that a try.
And you are just too friendly.
Oh, thanks. Most people.
Well, but in this case, I'm not giving you a compliment. Why did I say it like that?
Oh, I don't know. I guess I'm giving the bank the easy way off.
That is exactly right, Kurt. They have stolen your money, and they're being contemptuous of you.
Yes,
because now they've stolen your money. See, I'm trying to get you fired up. All right, I want to hear back from you, Kurt, that you made progress.
All right,
you didn't, we'll come up with another idea.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye. You're listening to The Clark Howard Show.
Thanks for listening to The Clark Howard Podcast. Download new episodes every Monday through Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.